You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast.
Today's agri feature is quite a unique one. We're looking into something in the world of game farming or preservation of game. And we're looking specifically at rhinos. If any of you know anything about rhinos in South Africa and around the world, is they are facing endangerment from poaching. Probably one of the biggest things that threatens rhinos in general, and we've actually got a very interesting project that's come straight out of my alma mater, and I'm so proud to be able to say that. The Rhizotope project has been developed to help conserve and preserve rhinos, and it specifically looks at, of course, the rhino horn. I'm joined on the line by two individuals, the chief operating officer of the Rhizotope project, that's Jessica Babich, as well as the director for radiation and health physics at the University of the Witwatersrand, that is Professor James Larkin, who have been involved in this unique and innovative solution. Good evening to you both. Thank you so much for taking the time. Jess, let me start with you. Tell us about Rhizotope as a project, how it came about. Obviously, the conservation part of it must have been essential and critical to the formation of this. But how did Rhizotope as a project come about?
Oh, thank you so much for having us. And you're absolutely correct. I'm an anthropologist with a speciality in environmental anthropology. And as a sector consultant, I do a lot of work for various species. And on one particular day, I went to do a talk at a lodge with regards to rhino conservation. And I happened to meet the good professor. We had a cup of coffee and he sort of said, well, you know, what do you think about maybe using nuclear technology to help in the defense of you know, anti-poaching? And I said, that's a wonderful idea. But what I knew about nuclear technology, then I could write on the back of a postage stamp. Suffice to say that the good professor then contacted me a few months later and said, look, the project's got momentum. Would you like to come on board and work alongside me? Because then I could bring my sector expertise, my work with endangered species, rhinos in particular, conservation networks and so forth into the mix. So that's basically how we got started. And look at all the years that James has worked hard with the science. I've been working hard with all of the conservation networks, which has brought us to this exciting point in the project where we are now.
Prof. Larkin, let me get you in here as the mad scientist who looked at this project and thought, not only is this possible, but we're actually going to get it done. Take me through the solution. Take me through the science behind what it is that you've developed and what it is that you've put together.
Okay, well, it's actually quite a simple idea if you think about it. The idea is to devalue a rhino horn in the eyes of the end users. And we do that by putting a certain amount of radioactive material in it, because most people have a very sort of visceral fear of something that might be radioactive. And so we use that fear, if you like, to devalue the other, you know, because we tell the world, hey, look, African rhino horn might be radioactive. And people are going to say, well, yeah, maybe I don't want it. We only have to look at like the Tylenol case in America, where they poison maybe three bottles of Tylenol in total. And that destroyed the market for many years in America for Tylenol. And we're using that same sort of antipathy to something people don't know to, in the first instance, to devalue the rhino horn in the eyes of the end users. So people think, oh, it might be radioactive. Thanks, no, I don't want it as a gift of high value. I'm not going to give it as a gift of high value because it's going to be perceived as something that's actually not very nice anymore. And the second bite of the cherry is if the animal is taken, then the presence of the radioactive material in the horn makes it significantly easier to detect the horn going across international borders at airports, harbours, border crossings and things like that. And people say, oh, well, they'll sneak it across the border into Mozambique or something. And you will say, yes, but between southern Africa and the Far East where the market is, those horns have to eventually end up in the formal transport sector. And that's where we get them, because those containers will have to go through portal monitors. The suitcases go through portal monitors. And if they miss it here at OR Tambo, there's another chance it's in Singapore or in Malaysia or Dubai or Abu Dhabi. All of the sort of hub airports, they are all very well equipped with this detection equipment. So we've, you know, radically increased the number of people and the machinery capable of detecting these horns. So the lucky thing is all of these detectors are there already. I don't have to put them in. They've been put in to defend countries against nuclear and radiological terrorism. So even better than that, you've got the detection equipment there. You've also got the trained personnel who know what to do if the alarm goes off. They've got those standard operating procedures that say that alarm goes off there, then you move that container, that suitcase, that package over to that section over there. We open it up and have a good look and good rummage around and see what's inside.
So you've effectively just turned rhino horns radioactive. That's absolutely crazy. Jess, I want to come back to you for a second. I want to look at the conservation side of it. I want to look at the humanity side of it, because with the statement I just made, and obviously with the explanation that Prof. Larkin just gave, the assumption automatically is that this is extremely dangerous. I mean, we are dealing with radioactive materials and radiation and those sorts of conversations. How harmful is this towards the rhino?
Not at all harmful. I mean, the whole purpose behind this project was to seek an alternative layer of protection for the species, because the rhino horn is the most valuable false commodity on the black market. The four biggest black market crimes are drugs, weapons, wildlife trafficking, and human trafficking. And where you find one of these, you always find at least one other. Black market crime is exceptionally lucrative, with a combined black market crime reaching into the early trillions, at least $2 trillion per annum upwards. So what has happened is that the capital that is required to protect the species here on the ground has astronomically spiked, and there has therefore been a disinvestment in the species, where people are no longer able to look after them, because you have to have a multi-layered approach. You've got to have boots on the ground. There's a lot of integrated tech. So from a species perspective, rhinos are vitally important for a healthy biodiversity because of their existence as a mega herbivore. There's a cascade of life that flourishes because of their presence underneath them, and all the way back from what they give back into the earth, right back up to supporting biodiversity, both ways of that cascade. So the species itself is unbelievably important, but the people that are protecting them, and they all do the most phenomenal jobs doing that, has become extremely, extremely costly. And so the advent of this tech is to say, what can this nuclear technology do? And through Prof. Larkin's work, he has established a safe point where the animal is absolutely at no risk whatsoever. And then in saying that, by applying the technology, we are changing that dynamic going forward into the future, from poaching being low risk, high reward, to changing that to high risk, low reward. That would be first prize.
Prof. Larkin, does this then mean that we no longer need to dehorn the rhinos in order to preserve and save them? Because we went through a whole phase as a world where this was the only probable solution, to just remove the horn, but that didn't really solve the problem. Otherwise, you wouldn't have come up with this solution. Yeah. Does this new solution now mean we don't need to do that?
Well, that's the intention, is that, you know, we keep the horn on the rhinos because research shows that the rhinos actually need it. You know, for the tourism industry and things like that, who wants to come to South Africa to see the big 4.5? They want to come and see the rhino, you know, the rhinos with their majestic horns. And yeah, so we want, you know, we do need to, the animals need the horns on the end of their noses, because that's what nature has, you know, put there, and nature doesn't waste any energy whatsoever, you know, doing things that it doesn't need to do, if you like. So rhino horn is where it needs to be. And just coming back to your point about the safety of it, I've spent the last 2 years, you know, developing and implementing very detailed computer models, and we've been using ultra high fast computers and computing centers and crunching some serious numbers to, you know, try and make sure that what we claim is the truth. And, you know, that's being confirmed by my colleagues elsewhere in the world.
It's absolutely remarkable. Jess, in closing, how expensive is the solution? Because I imagine a project like this doesn't happen for free. It doesn't happen without the necessary funding to do the research, to help professors like Prof. Larkin be able to test their theories and build a solution that is sustainable. How expensive is this going to be to implement within the rhinos? And is it something that the government could perhaps, from a conservation point of view, get involved in?
Well, that was one of the premises with regards to how we develop this model, because at the end of the day, it needs to be accessible to anybody and everybody that wants it. And so what we've done over the years and the refinement of everything is to conclude and to confirm that at this stage, it costs 24,000 rand to treat an animal, but that includes a 5-year radiological protection plan. At the end of that 5 years, we would simply come in and top that up. And when compared to other methods that are used, such as dehorning, and let me just say that if somebody owns rhinos and they feel that that's what they need to do, we are not here to tell them any different. We are just here to offer them an alternative. And because one needs to dehorn a rhino once every 18 months to 2 years, the application of the rhizotope is a very, very competitive product and service that we are wanting to offer. But I must add that while we do have that financial model, we also have models where there might be instances where spaces and places are not able to afford that. So we're working very hard with other entities and supporters around the world to try and gather extra funding together to be able to support those in populations or individual rhinos that at the moment just don't, the people that are looking after them don't have the resources to do. So we're making a functional and viable model on two fronts.
Truly a remarkable project aimed at conserving the rhino species, but also limiting poaching and reducing poaching. I think it's quite a lovely feature to have on our agri feature for the day. But we'll have to leave it at that. Thank you so much both for your time. That's Jessica Babich, who is the Chief Operating Officer of the Rhizotope Project, as well as Prof. James Larkin, who is a director at the Unit for Radiation and Health Physics at Wits University.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.